burst into flame as they came toppling down. Soon there was great peril of fire behind the wall, and all who could be spared were busy quelling the flames that sprang up in many places. Then among the greater castes there fell another hail, less ruinous but more horrible. All about the streets and lanes behind the gate it tumbled down, small round shot that did not burn. But when men ran to learn what it might be, they cried aloud or wept, for the enemy was flinging into the city all the heads of those who had fallen fighting at Osgiliath, or on the Ramas, or in the field. They were grim to look on, for though some were crushed and shapeless, and some had been cruelly hewn, yet many had features that could be told, and it seemed that they had died in pain, and all were branded with a foul token of the lidless eye. But marred and dishonoured as they were, it often chanced that thus a man would see again the face of someone that he had known, who had walked proudly once in arms, or tilled the fields, or ridden in upon a holiday from the green vales in the hills. In vain men shook their fists at the pitiless foes that swarmed before the gate. Curses they heeded not, nor understood the tongues of western men, crying with harsh voices like beasts and carrion birds. But soon there were few left in Minas Tirith who had the heart to stand up and defy the hosts of Mordor. For yet another weapon, swifter than hunger, the Lord of the Dark Tower had, dread and despair. The Nazgul came again, and as their dark lord now grew and put forth his strength, so their voices, which uttered only his will and his malice, were filled with evil and horror. Ever they circled above the city, like vultures that expect their fill of doomed men's flesh. Out of sight and shot they flew, and yet were ever present, and their deadly voices rent the air. More unbearable they became, not less, at each new cry. At length even the stout-hearted would fling themselves to the ground as the hidden menace passed over them, or they would stand, letting their weapons fall from nerveless hands, while into their minds a blackness came, and they thought no more of war, but only of hiding and of trawling, and of death. During all this black day, Faramir lay upon his bed in the chamber of the White Tower, wandering in a desperate fever. Dying, someone said, and soon dying, all men were saying upon the walls and in the streets. And by him his father sat, and said nothing, but watched, and gave no longer any heed to the defence. No hours so dark had Pippin known, not even the clutches of the Uruk-hai. It was his duty to wait upon the Lord, and wait he did, forgotten, it seemed, standing by the door of the unlit chamber, mastering his own fears as best he could. And as he watched, it seemed to him that Denethor grew old before his eyes, as if something had snapped in his proud will, and his stern mind was overthrown. Grief, maybe, had wrought it, and remorse. He saw tears on that once tearless face, more unbearable than wrath. "Do not weep, Lord," he stammered. "Perhaps he will get well. Have you asked Gandalf?"
"Comfort me not with wizards," said Denethor. "The fool's hope has failed. The enemy has found it, and now his power waxes. He sees our very thoughts, and all we do is ruinous. I sent my son forth, unthanked, unblessed, out into needless peril, and here he lies with poison in his veins. Nay, nay, whatever may now betide in war, my line too is ending. Even the house of the stewards has failed. Mean folk shall rule the last remnant of the kings of men, lurking in the hills until all are hounded out." Men came to the door, crying for the lord of the city. "Nay, I will not come down," he said. "I must stay beside my son. He might still speak before the end, but that is near. Follow whom you will, even the grey fool, though his hope has failed. Here I stay."
So it was that Gandalf took command of the last defence of the city of Gondor. Wherever he came, men's hearts would lift again, and the winged shadows pass from memory. Tirelessly he strode from citadel to gate, from north to south about the wall, and with him went the Prince of Dol Amroth in his shining mail. For he and his knights still held themselves like lords in whom the race of Numenor ran true. Men that saw them whispered, saying, "Belike the old tales speak well. There is elvish blood in the veins of that folk, for the people of Nimrodel dwelt in that land once long ago." And then one would sing amid the gloom some staves of the Lay of Nimrodel, or other songs of the Vale of Anduin out of vanished years. And yet, when they had gone, the shadows closed on men again, and their hearts went cold, and the valour of Gondor withered into ash. And so slowly they passed out of a dim day of fears into the darkness of a desperate night. Fires now raged unchecked in the first circle of the city, and the garrison upon the outer wall was already in many places cut off from retreat. But the faithful who remained there at their posts were few. Most had fled beyond the second gate. Far behind the battle, the river had been swiftly bridged, and all day more force and gear of war had poured across. Now at last, in the middle night, the assault was loosed. The vanguard passed through the trenches of fire by many devious paths that had been left between them. On they came, reckless of their loss as they approached, still bunched and herded within the range of bowmen on the wall. But indeed, there were too few now left there to do them great damage. Though the light of the fires showed up many a mark for archers of such skill as Gondor once had boasted. Then, perceiving that the valour of the city was already beaten down, the hidden captain put forth his strength. Slowly the great siege towers built in Osgiliath rolled forward through the dark. Messengers came again to the chamber in the White Tower, and Pippin let them enter, for they were urgent. Denethor turned his head slowly from Faramir's face and looked at them silently. "The first circle of the city is burning, Lord," they said. "What are your commands? You are still the Lord and Steward. Not all will follow Mithrandir. Men are flying from the walls and leaving them unmanned."
"Why? Why do the fools fly?" said Denethor. "Better to burn sooner than late, for burn we must. Go back to your bonfire, and I will go now to my pyre, to my pyre. No tomb for Denethor and Faramir, no tomb, no long slow sleep of death embalmed. We will burn like heathen kings before ever a ship sailed hither from the west. The west has failed. Go back and burn."
The messengers, without bow or answer, turned and fled. Now Denethor stood up and released the fevered hand of Faramir that he had held.
"He is burning, already burning," he said sadly. "The house of his spirit crumbles."
Then, stepping softly towards Pippin, he looked down at him.
"Farewell," he said. "Farewell, Peregrin, son of Paladin. Your service has been short, and now it is drawing to an end. I release you from the little that remains. Go now, and die in what way seems best to you. And with whom you will, even that friend whose folly brought you to this death. Send for my servants, and then go. Farewell."
"I will not say farewell, my lord," said Pippin, kneeling. And then, suddenly, hobbit-like once more, he stood up and looked the old man in the eyes. "I will take your leave, sir," he said, "for I want to see Gandalf very much indeed. But he's no fool, and I will not think of dying until he despairs of life. But from my word and your service I do not wish to be released while you live. And if they come at last to the citadel, I hope to be here and stand before you and earn, perhaps, the alms that you have given me."
"Do as you will, Master Halfling," said Denethor, "but my life is broken. Send for my servants." He turned back to Faramir.
Pippin left him and called for the servants, and they came. 6 men of the household, strong and fair, yet they trembled at the summons. But in a quiet voice Denethor bade them lay warm coverlets on Faramir's bed and take it up. And they did so, and lifting up the bed, they bore it from the chamber. Slowly they paced to trouble the fevered man as little as might be, and Denethor, now bending on a staff, followed them, and last came Pippin. Out from the white tower they walked, as if to a funeral, out into the darkness, where the overhanging cloud was lit beneath with flickers of dull red. Softly they paced the great courtyard, and at a word from Denethor halted beside the withered tree. All was silent, save for the rumour of war in the city down below, and they heard the water dripping sadly from the dead branches into the dark pool. Then they went on through the citadel gate, where the sentinels stared at them in wonder and dismay as they passed by. Turning westward, they came at length to a door in the rearward wall of the sixth circle. Fen Hollin it was called, for it was kept ever shut, save at times of funeral, and only the lord of the city might use that way, or those who bore the token of the tombs and tended the houses of the dead. Beyond it went a winding road, that descended in many curves down to the narrow land, under the shadow of Mindoloin's precipice, where stood the mansions of the dead kings and of their stewards. A porter sat in a little house beside the way, and with fear in his eyes he came forth bearing a lantern in his hand. At the lord's command he unlocked the door, and silently it swung back, and they passed through, taking the lanterns from his hand. It was dark on the climbing road, between ancient walls and many pillared balusters looming in the swaying lantern beams. Their slow feet echoed as they walked down, down, until at last they came to the silent street, Rath Dinan, between pale domes and empty halls and images of men long dead, and they entered into the house of the stewards and set down their burden. There Pippin, staring uneasily about him, saw that he was in a wide vaulted chamber, draped, as it were, with the great shadows that the little lantern threw upon its shrouded walls, and dimly to be seen were many rows of tables, carved of marble, and upon each table lay a sleeping form, hands folded, head pillowed upon stone. But one table near at hand stood broad and bare. Upon it, at a sign from Denethor, they laid Faramir and his father side by side, and covered them with one covering, and stood then with bowed heads, as mourners beside a bed of death. Then Denethor spoke in a low voice. "Here we will wait," he said, "but send not for the embalmers. Bring us wood quick to burn, and lay it all about us and beneath, and pour oil upon it, and when I bid you thrust in a torch, do this and speak no more to me. Farewell."
"By your leave, lord," said Pippin, and turned and fled in terror from the deathly house. "Poor Faramir," he thought. "I must find Gandalf. Poor Faramir. Quite likely he needs medicine more than tears. Oh, where can I find Gandalf? In the thick of things, I suppose, and he will have no time to spare for dying men or madmen."
At the door he turned to one of the servants who had remained on guard there.
"Your master is not himself," he said. "Go slow. Bring no fire to this place while Faramir lives. Do nothing until Gandalf comes."
"Who is the master of Minas Tirith?" the man answered. "The Lord Denethor or the Grey Wanderer?"
"The Grey Wanderer or no one, it would seem," said Pippin.
And he sped back and up the winding way as swiftly as his feet would carry him, past the astonished porter, out through the door, and on, till he came near the gate of the citadel. The sentinel hailed him as he went by, and he recognized the voice of Beregond.
"Whither do you run, Master Peregrine?" he cried. "To find Mithrandir," Pippin answered.
"The lord's errands are urgent, and should not be hindered by me," said Beregond. "But tell me quickly, if you may, what goes forward? Whither has my lord gone? I've just come on duty, but I heard that he passed towards the closed door, and men were bearing Faramir before him."
"Yes," said Pippin, "to the silent street."
Beregond bowed his head to hide his tears.
"They said that he was dying," he sighed, "and now he is dead."
"No," said Pippin, "not yet. And even now his death might be prevented, I think. But the lord of the city, Beregond, has fallen before his city is taken. He is fey and dangerous.
Quickly he told of Denethor's strange words and deeds.
I must find Gandalf at once.
Then you must go down to the battle.
I know. The Lord has given me leave. But, Beregond, if you can, do something to stop any dreadful thing happening.
The Lord does not permit those who wear the black and silver to leave their post for any cause, save at his own command.
Well, you must choose between orders and the life of Faramir, said Pippin. And as for orders, I think you have a madman to deal with, not a lord. I must run. I will return if I can. He ran on, down towards the outer city. Men flying back from the burning passed him, and some, seeing his livery, turned and shouted, but he paid no heed. At last he was through the second gate, beyond which great fires leapt up between the walls, yet it seemed strangely silent. No noise or shouts of battle or din of arms could be heard. Then suddenly there was a dreadful cry and a great shock, and a deep echoing boom. Forcing himself on against a gust of fear and horror that shook him almost to his knees, Pippin turned a corner, opening on the wide place behind the city gate. He stopped dead. He had found Gandalf, but he shrank back, cowering into a shadow. Ever since the middle night, the great assault had gone on. The drums rolled. To the north and to the south, company upon company of the enemy pressed to the walls. There came great beasts, like moving houses in the red and fitful light. The Mumakil of the Harad, dragging through the lanes amid the fires, huge towers and engines. Yet their captain cared not greatly what they did or how many might be slain. Their purpose was only to test the strength of the defence, and to keep the men of Gondor busy in many places. It was against the gate that he would throw his heaviest weight. Very strong it might be, wrought of steel and iron, and guarded with towers and bastions of indomitable stone, yet it was the key, the weakest point in all that high and impenetrable wall. The drums rolled louder. Fires leapt up. Great engines crawled across the field, and in the midst was a huge ram, great as a forest tree 100 feet in length, swinging on mighty chains. Long had it been forging in the dark smithies of Mordor, and its hideous head, founded of black steel, was shaped in the likeness of a ravening wolf. On its spells of ruin lay. Grond they named it, in memory of the hammer of the underworld of old. Great beasts drew it, orcs surrounded it, and behind walked mountain trolls to wield it. But about the gate, resistance still was stout. And there the knights of Dol Amroth and the hardiest of the garrison stood at bay. Shot and dart fell thick. Siege towers crashed or blazed suddenly like torches. All before the walls on either side of the gate, the ground was choked with wreck and with bodies of the slain, yet still driven as by a madness more and more came up. Grond crawled on. Upon its housing no fire would catch. And though now and again some great beast that hauled it would go mad and spread stamping ruin among the orcs innumerable that guarded it, their bodies were cast aside from its path, and others took their place. Grond crawled on. The drums rolled wildly. Over the hills of slain a hideous shape appeared, a horseman, tall, hooded, cloaked in black. Slowly, trampling the fallen, he rode forth, heeding no longer any dart. He halted and held up a long, pale sword, and as he did so a great fear fell on all, defender and foe alike, and the hands of men drooped to their sides, and no bow sang. For a moment all was still. The drums rolled and rattled. With a vast rush, Grond was hurled forward by huge hands. It reached the gate. It swung. A deep boom rumbled through the city, like thunder running in the clouds, but the doors of iron and posts of steel withstood the stroke. Then the black captain rose in his stirrups and cried aloud in a dreadful voice, speaking in some forgotten tongue words of power and terror to rend both heart and stone. Thrice he cried. Thrice the great ram boomed, and suddenly upon the last stroke the gate of Gondor broke. As if stricken by some blasting spell, it burst asunder.
There was a flash of searing lightning, and the doors tumbled in ribbon fragments to the ground. In rode the Lord of the Nazgul. A great black shape against the fires beyond he loomed up, grown to a vast menace of despair. In rode the Lord of the Nazgul under the archway that no enemy ever yet had passed, and all fled before his face. All save one. There waiting, silent and still in the space before the gate, sat Gandalf upon Shadowfax. Shadowfax, who alone among the free horses of the earth endured the terror, unmoving, steadfast as a graven image in Wrath-Dedan.
"You cannot enter here," said Gandalf, and the huge shadow halted. "Go back to the abyss prepared for you. Go back. Fall into the nothingness that awaits you and your master. Go."
The black rider flung back his hood, and behold, he had a kingly crown, and yet upon no head visible was it set. The red fire shone between it and the mantle's shoulders, vast and dark. From a mouth unseen there came a deadly laughter.
"Old fool," he said, "old fool, this is my hour. Do you not know death when you see it? Die now and curse in vain."
And with that he lifted high his sword, and flames ran down the blade. Gandalf did not move, and in that very moment, away behind in some courtyard of the city, a cock crowed. Shrill and clear he crowed, recking nothing of wizardry or war, welcoming only the morning that in the sky far above the shadows of death was coming with the dawn. And as if in answer, there came from far away another note. Horns! 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 In dark Mindoluan sides they dimly echoed. Great horns of the north wildly blowing. Rohan had come at last!